You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
ISIS doubles down on murderous online inspiration. New technologies for fighting terror have privacy implications. WikiLeaks isn't done with the DNC, and speculation continues about the identity of the hackers, with circumstantial evidence pointing towards Moscow. People are shocked and/or admiring about Trump's asking Russia what's in Clinton's 30,000 deleted emails. Congress and others mull what counts as an act of cyber war. And security researchers do some window shopping in the dark web. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, July 28, 2016. Investigators in France and Germany describe extensive posts on social media by those apparently responsible for recent attacks in Normandy and Bavaria. The alleged attackers, all now dead either by their own hand or at the hands of police, left behind explicit statements of their intent to kill and their allegiance to ISIS. ISIS has continued to claim and praise the attackers, suggesting that the caliphate is doubling down on its information operations strategy of inspiring lone wolves, in which U.S. FBI Director Comey yesterday called the terrorist diaspora. The public mood toward security policy is said to be shifting in both France and Germany, with much talk in France of adopting Israeli-style security measures, and with discussion in Germany of moving from a Willkommen to an Adieu approach to immigration. In no case are there any obvious responses to terror groups' information operations, but in a gesture against ISIS inspiration, Le Monde has said it will no longer publish pictures of terrorists. Over in India, Facebook is reported to have begun censoring posts related to Kashmir, the disputed province being a perennial locus for sectarian ethnic conflict. When it comes to analyzing your network traffic, you can look at the actual data, but according to Shahzad Merchant from Gigamon, there's a strong case to be made for making metadata analysis part of your toolkit.
The way to think about metadata is that it is information about a conversation, not the actual conversation. So the classic example is, if you think about a phone conversation, metadata is like the phone bill. It tells you who's calling, from where, to whom, for how long, over what lines of communications. It gives you all the information about the conversation without actually giving you the entire conversation itself. And network metadata is very similar. So network metadata is information about network conversations. So any traffic flowing on the network infrastructure, your network sessions, your network conversations, your network flows, network metadata is information about those network conversations. But in addition to that, a lot of very specific information that is relevant to the security space, for example, information about DNS queries, information about every URL being accessed, information about every HTTP redirect that you get, information about certificates on encrypted communications. All that information is available and can get extracted and presented as network metadata.
Of course, when you're analyzing data, privacy can be an issue. Merchant says that there are instances where looking at metadata actually makes it possible to analyze information while complying with privacy policies.
For example, you don't want to take a look at somebody's health records flowing online, or for example, if somebody's doing a banking transaction and you don't want to actually look into the actual data. Metadata gives you all the information about those flows. So for example, if somebody is accessing traffic in a remote part of the world that he should not typically be going to, you don't necessarily have to look into the conversation. You can know that that is anomalous behavior. If somebody is visiting websites or URLs that are on a known list of bad websites, you don't necessarily have to look into the conversation. You can just know from the behavior that people are doing something anomalous. There's another reason why I think network metadata is very important. And that is when you start taking a look to the future, we know, for example, 100 gig networks are coming. People are beginning to deploy 100 gig infrastructure. There's a big challenge with 100 gig technologies. On 100 gig network infrastructure, the time from one packet to the next packet is 6.7 nanoseconds. That is 6.7 billionths of a second. And so I think it's going to become extremely difficult for security solutions to do anything meaningful on a packet-by-packet basis if they have to do any kind of deep packet inspection, right? There's just far too much traffic, and it is flowing far too quickly. And I think that's where metadata, again, plays a very important role. It's being able to not have to look at every packet on the wire and look at information about that transaction to give you an indicator of what's actually going on. So I think these two reasons, the speed of data and the issues associated with privacy, confidentiality, and compliance, both of these are pointing heavily in the direction of leading towards network metadata.
That's Shahzad Merchant. He's the CTO at Gigamon. WikiLeaks continues to post Democratic National Committee files, most recently MP3 audio files pulled from hacked emails. The files amount to around 15 minutes of pretty anodyne stuff. One file, a chat about visiting a zoo, even sounds like the inadvertent result of what the kids indelicately call butt-dialing. Their basic content is nothing new. Some of the people who called the DNC didn't like Senator Sanders and wanted him defeated. Speculation continues about the source of the leaks. Almost all who've looked into the matter see strong circumstantial evidence that those involved in hacking the DNC were Russian and probably connected to the Russian government. Some go farther and attribute the year-long intrusion, the length of which is no longer in dispute, to the Russian intelligence services FSB and GRU. But it is worth noting that circumstantial evidence does leave room for doubt and that attribution is always notoriously difficult. Analysts continue to speculate about the presumably Russian hackers' motives in leaking the files. People close to the Clinton campaign have been saying it's because President Putin would like to see Donald Trump become his American counterpart, a suggestion Trump dismisses out of hand. Many within the U.S. Intelligence Committee also think this unlikely. The Council on Foreign Relations blog suggests an alternative possibility. Perhaps the files were leaked when they were, and with all their attendant Guccifer 2.0 sock puppetry, because the organs, particularly the GRU, got caught, and so were making the best of a bad situation. Meanwhile, Republican nominee Trump has expressed the hope that the Russians can tell everyone what was in those 30,000 emails Democratic nominee Clinton erased before turning the homebrew server she used during her tenure as Secretary of State over for security inspection. Reactions to Trump's speech range from the not necessarily approving but more or less admiring, as in Instapundit's evaluation, troll-level, supreme galactic overlord, to the condemnatory, for example, the suggestion in Ars Technica that the speech amounted almost to solicitation of cybercrime. More WikiLeaks are expected, as are more hacks of political campaigns. Some op-eds, notably in NextGov, are suggesting it's time for the Secret Service to crack down on candidates' cybersecurity the way it already has on their physical security. This has prompted renewed discussion in the U.S. of what counts as an act of war in cyberspace. Espionage doesn't generally count, so what might? Turning with relief to more conventional forms of cybercriminality, we see that researchers at Digital Shadows have published a look at Deer.io, a Russian site-building platform that the researchers say harbors an extensive crimeware market. Deer.io hosted crime lord Tessa88's Darkside.global, and allegedly there's a lot of other malware being hawked there to this day. Some of the offerings on Deer.io seem innocent enough, like a tennis score predictor, assuming it's legit, but most are fairly obviously crooked. Elsewhere in the black market, Trend Micro looks at Spampato ransomware, which is now being offered as a service. We're not suggesting you should do this, but if you were a bad guy, you could buy a lifetime license for Spampato for the low, low price of just $39. And finally, the controllers of Petya and Misha ransomware are adopting aggressive marketing tactics. They've released keys to one of their criminal rivals, Chimera, and they've also established an affiliate program. So now you could, although of course you wouldn't, participate in cybercrime just as if you were an Amazon associate, only an evil one. Profit from Petya and Misha, they say. Step right up. They offer high infection rates, easy administration, and free crypting service. But wait, there's more. Provably fair, as professional cybercriminals, we know that you can't trust anyone, the impresarios write. So we developed a payment system based on multi-sig addresses where no one, including us, can rip you off. Well, the prices are low. We guess the boss is on vacation and they've all gone crazy. Their secret? Volume.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
Joining me once again is Marcus Roschecker. He's from the University of Maryland Center for Health and Homeland Security. Marcus, I saw an article recently on the Heat Street website. They were talking about facial recognition and how it's a threat to anonymity, specifically an app called FindFace, which was recently released in Russia, where it's a facial recognition software. And they're saying that you can take a photo of a passerby and with 70% reliability, identify who that person is based on publicly available information. What do you think about this? This notion of losing our privacy in public places, this is a serious thing, yes?
Oh, absolutely. It's a very serious thing. And I think the privacy implications of this app and all the facial recognition software that's forthcoming here are readily apparent to anyone who just thinks about it for just a minute or so. I think with apps like this and with facial recognition in public places, you know, we see cameras everywhere now. And if these cameras then have that facial recognition software built in, I think there are huge implications for privacy. I think, you know, we can almost forget about anonymity in public spaces because if all these cameras are able to identify individuals just by these individuals walking into the point of view of these cameras, I mean, our anonymity is then gone. Similarly, our movements in public spaces may start to be tracked as we move from the view of one camera into the next. These cameras, through facial recognition, will be able to track us as we move along in this public space. So there are certainly very serious privacy implications here.
Yeah, the article mentioned that even some high schools and churches have started to use facial recognition to take attendance. So, you know, that doesn't seem like a bad thing to use it for. But as you said, the privacy implications for law enforcement and even just your general comings and goings are a bit harrowing. Is there any pending policy to address this sort of thing?
This facial recognition software is being used without an individual's permission. We as an individual have no control over whether or not we are tracked by these cameras as we're out in public, and we have no way of opting out of that kind of tracking. So all that being said, I think, yes, we as a society need to think more about what's coming our way in terms of the technology, the technological capabilities of facial recognition, and I think you know, Congress and other policymakers are going to have to start thinking more and more about these issues as they're coming our way, and perhaps rethink some of the policies that we have in place now, rethink some of the laws that we have in place now, and see if they need to be amended in any way to address this new technology coming.
All right, Marcus Rauschecker, we'll keep an eye on it. Thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and zero trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.